I'm excited to be here today to talk to you about what we've been doing in Ohio, specifically our public health needs assessment. We've been identifying the health status and disparities that our disability population faces. Listed are my co-authors. I have no relationship to disclose. Just to give you a quick overview, we are the Ohio Disability and Health Program. This is a CDC-funded program aimed at improving health outcomes for people with disabilities, and we are partnered. We are housed at the Ohio State University Neisinger Center. We're partnering with the Ohio Department of Health and also our University of Cincinnati USED, which is a university center for excellence in developmental disabilities. And then our last partner is also the Ohio Colleges of Medicine Government Resource Center. And Dr. Susan Hafkamp is our PI. So the learning objectives, we're going to be going over health disparities that we've identified for our population. We'll discuss barriers that our disability population has in accessing healthcare. And lastly, we'll talk about our public health priorities for this population and how to address them. So as I talk about our needs assessment, I'll talk about our sources, share some key findings from our assessment. We'll talk about our outcomes, and then lastly, the strategies that we have learned. So public health needs assessment, why are we doing this in the first place? A lot of funders are asking their grantees to do these nowadays, and really, it provides us a lot of value. Specifically, we all have limited resources. That means you can't impact every single health issue as much as we love to do everything we can't. So this really helps us to prioritize and to inform the strategies that we want to invest in. Secondly, in our field, we really need to collaborate with partners within our communities. If you don't, you're not going to see the sustainable change that we want to see that's going to last. So finding common ground is going to be important, and this can be a tool to start with. And then lastly, in our field of public health, we're really facing increased pressures to show that we're making progress and that the money that we're spending is really going to make a difference. So just having a strong understanding of where we're beginning, having that baseline will help us monitor that progress. So this kind of just sums up the whole reason for doing an assessment. We'll become a good resource for partners and stakeholders. I wanted to share this quote with you. It's from a participant at one of our open forums. They said this: "I think sometimes we let the disabilities, their disabilities, just overshadow that they have the same needs we all have." And just really trying to understand those unique needs and the complex barriers is what we want to accomplish with this assessment. So going to sources. We took a mixed methods approach. So we first wanted to look at quantitative data. What are the statistics? What does the data show? But really, we also want to know the qualitative data. What is the story behind those numbers? What are the insights we can gather so we can really understand what the numbers mean to us? And the topics we looked at for quantitative are disability prevalence, healthcare access, health status, chronic disease, and health behaviors. And then for qualitative data, we looked at healthcare access, health promotion, and emergency preparedness. So we started with secondary data. We looked at three population surveys. The first one is our 2012 Ohio Medicaid Assessment Survey, and I'm going to call it the OMAS moving forward. It's just much easier to say. This survey is unique to Ohio. It's about a sample size of 23,000. It looks at Medicaid, Medicaid-eligible, and non-Medicaid populations specifically. Goes into depth with looking at healthcare access. In regards to disability, the prevalence that we're looking at, we're capturing a more rigid clinical definition of disability, looking at the way people interact with the health system and other benefit programs. For whatever data we could not get from this, we looked at the 2010 and 2011 BRFIS data, which is the CDC's risk behavior data. And we also supplemented this with the 2009 to 2011 three-year estimate for the American Community Survey, which is the census data. And this is all weighted and representative of our population. We also collected some primary data of our own. We held three open forums throughout Ohio. We had one online survey that we developed in English and Spanish, and then we held one small focus group. So for our open forums, we had people with disabilities show up, caregivers, advocates, and also disability professionals. And we had a total of 60 participants participate. And at this event, this is where we really heard those stories I was talking about earlier. And I'll be sharing quotes throughout that we gathered at these open forums. For our online survey, the reason we provided this is because we want to give the communities a chance to provide their feedback for those who couldn't make our open forums, which we only held three throughout the state. Like I said, they're in English and Spanish. The majority was in English. We actually had 149 respondents. And for our Somali focus group, the reason we held this is because Columbus has the second largest Somali population in the nation, second to Minneapolis, Minnesota. So we thought it would definitely be important to consider their feedback. We had 19 participants and one interpreter. So moving into findings, I'll start with disability prevalence. We found about, from the OMOS, 18%, so that's about 1 in 5 adults had a disability. And that's pretty consistent with the national average and what we expected from other surveys. So as for child, the OMOS actually showed 18%, which is a lot higher than other surveys have shown. And the reason for this is basically survey methodology. The questions asked are different than what you might have been asked on the BRFIS or the ACS. And also, the questions are answered by the parents, so it's not youth self-reporting, it's parent-reported. So these are several factors involved. Talking about trends, we know that there's an increase with disability prevalence as you age. We see this in the data here for children, and we'll see similar increase in trends for adults as well. However, please note that 65 and older shows a drop, which is actually not what we expect. Other surveys show different, that you actually do increase. And just to explain this, the OMOS actually excludes institutionalized settings. So hospitals and assisted living facilities are not captured in this data. And additionally, people who have a disability that are on Medicare, under 65, they're captured in the prevalence rate up to 65, but after 65, that group is lost because they're merged with all other Medicare participants. So that's the explanation for the drop. So looking at race and ethnicity, we actually found in Ohio that Black and African Americans had an increased estimate of disability compared to other races. So that was an interesting for us to know. Here is a map separated out by counties of Ohio. The light blue is going to be low disability prevalence rates. The dark blue is going to be higher rates. So as you can see, the south and southeast region has the highest rates in Ohio, and that's actually our Appalachian region. We know there are higher rates of poverty there, and we're not clear as to why there's a higher rate of disability in those areas, but that's definitely important for us to know as we continue to work with these communities. So looking at the adult health risk behaviors, and we're just naming a few, we're comparing by disability status. The light blue bars will represent people with disability. The dark blue will be people without disability, and that's going to be consistent for the remainder of my presentation. And as you can see, we looked at smoking daily, no regular exercise, no annual dental visit. And people with disabilities are engaging in these types of behaviors at a much higher rate than people without. You can notice the disparities. I'll point out one, no regular exercise, 49% compared to 28%. And these are good information for us to work with. Looking at chronic health conditions, we see similar disparities across the board. We looked at arthritis, diabetes, asthma, heart disease, and obesity. The most stark one is arthritis. 50% of people with disabilities experience this, whereas 19% of the general population do. For obesity, we have 37.8% of people with disabilities having obesity versus 26% of their counterpart. So moving on to health promotion, We really want to understand if people with disabilities are utilizing health promotion programs. If not, what are the barriers and what are the reasons for this? So one of the top reasons that people listed that they aren't participating in health promotion programs is that they have never even heard of health classes or health activities. So that could mean that the communication of these programs are just not reaching this population. Another thing, at 29% felt that they didn't have the adequate transportation to get to these health classes. And we know that's a big issue and definitely not an easy fix. We asked them if they were to participate in a health promotion program, what kind of program would they want to be part of? And the most preferred program was actually one that's inclusive of people with and without disabilities together, obviously and appropriately effective for all. We asked this in comparison to a program just for people with disabilities and also just for them and their families, and the most preferred was one that's inclusive. And this is a quote from a mother who has a son with a disability, and she says, "My son is a person with autism and doesn't read at all to my knowledge. Doctors just give him a bunch of brochures and say, here, have your mom read these to you. It would be great to have more information that is less print-oriented and written at an education level that's lower and simpler. We are not all geniuses." And I think this just goes to show that if we're trying to promote health promotion among this population, we need to be considerate of the varying levels of abilities and backgrounds. So with access to healthcare, we wanted to know if they were getting any of their needed healthcare. We looked at if they did not get any needed healthcare, didn't get any needed prescription, needed dental care, or other healthcare needs. And it's stark to see that 59% of people with disabilities feel like they're not getting any needed healthcare compared to 27% of the general population. Granted, people with disabilities are probably going to have more complex and unique healthcare needs, but the fact that 59% feel that they are not getting those needs met at all is a great concern for our field. From our survey, we asked, well, what are some of the barriers accessing healthcare? We want to really understand what are the issues they're having. 60% felt that they're having trouble scheduling. And that's the first touch point with getting medical care. And if they're having trouble right at the beginning getting something scheduled, that's going to impact the rest of their experience. 50% are saying that they have problems directly with healthcare providers. We see that they a lot have problems physically accessing buildings, which is really unacceptable. And then on the lower end, some people do not have personal care assistants to really assist with the appointments. And here's a quote from someone who is both deaf and blind. And they said, "I'm legally blind and deaf. They hand me papers and say, here, fill this out, read this. I try to explain that I may not look like I have that type of disability, but I do. I get a look of complacency like I'm causing a problem." And this is, I think, a frustration and experience that is true to many people with disabilities. And having that kind of attitude and treatment can really negatively impact the overall experience and honestly impact their quality of care and their health outcomes at the end. So emergency preparedness, this is kind of a relatively up-and-coming field. It's been new to us. It's been exciting to learn about. We do know from some literature that people with disabilities tend to have worse outcomes than people without in emergency situations, and that's not necessarily hard to believe. So we want to ask them, during an emergency that you're required to evacuate, how many of you actually have an emergency plan? And 60% of the people we answered, and most of them are people with disabilities, some are caregivers, so they answered on behalf of the ones they're caring for, and a couple were professionals or advocates, and we asked them to answer from the perspective of the disability community. So 60% said, no, we don't have a plan. And that's not surprising, I guarantee you. Most of us here probably don't have a plan either. And of that 60%, almost 70% said they don't know where to even go to find resources or information to start building a plan or a toolkit. And what we've found from our open forums is that people from the disability community are telling us, well, we're so busy just trying to get through one day. It's so stressful making it through one day. How are we expected to plan for the future or to build up a repertoire of medications that will last us for emergencies when we are just getting the amount for 1 month or whatever? So these are clear challenges. They're not an excuse to not address this at all, but if we want to help this population be more prepared, we have to keep these things in mind and find different ways to support them moving forward. So our outcomes for the assessment. We developed two products. The first one is our needs assessment, Disability and Health in Ohio, and you can download this on our website. This is basically a comprehensive report. It has everything, all the surveys and qualitative work that we did. We have a smaller one, that's the Disability Data Report. This is embedded in the larger one, and it's only the population surveys for those who need that more direct information. So outcomes, we were able to identify health status and health disparities. We were able to inform and have justified strategies and activities for our program. We were able to develop new initiatives and build new partnerships for our program. And really, we've become a strong resource for disability in Ohio, and this is really laying the foundation to advance disability health for our state. And just as an example of our success, we started working with tobacco because we knew that smoking was such a disparate issue. And we worked with our quit line. They started tracking disability as a demographic on their intake forms. In the spring, we'll be rolling out a campaign to really promote the quit line to our disability population. Also, we've reinforced current initiatives like CDSMP, which is Chronic Disease Self-Management Program. It's a Stanford program and run by Aging in Ohio, where we started recruiting people who are deaf and fluent in American Sign Language to learn this program and to offer it to their deaf communities. And then lastly, we've become a resource and we're raising awareness. I will mention briefly some challenges. Disability is really hard to capture. Every survey is asking different questions. So what we really need to be cognizant of this as we talk about who we're working with. The perceptions, even among people with disabilities, vary. Some people might not see themselves as having a disability and so forth. Another important question that has come up is, we've been asked, is race and ethnicity the underlying factor driving the health disparities between disability and no disability? And that's an excellent question. And what we've looked into and from publications that Dr. Willie Horner Johnson has done is that if you separate out these health indicators by race, you might see disparities. But then if you separate them out further by disability status, you'll see even more disparities. And we believe that there's a combined effect for those who fall into both categories. So we're definitely not discounting that race and ethnicity plays a huge role. And just to sum it up, what we've learned is that it's important to really have a clear understanding of the population you're working with, to know their complex needs so that you can effectively improve whatever it is that you want to work with them on. Like I said, defining disability, having that shared understanding of who you're talking to as you work with partners so that you are on the same page. And then it is important to work with partners because in public health, you really need to build that infrastructure to address these issues from all sides. So you need to raise awareness and to target your work. Like I said, you can't do everything, so you need to do certain things well. And lastly, also, a couple of our partners, they're more than willing to be on board with us, but they don't really know how to address disability in their work. So this is new to them, so they come to us as subject matter experts, and we really need to support and enable them in this partnership so that they can make the most out of their collaboration. And it's really crucial to track disability. If you don't track disability as a demographic, you're not going to be able to monitor your progress and your impact as you move forward. So I'm going to end on this quote. This is from a woman with a mother who has Alzheimer's, and this is what she says. If we had a program that brought us all there, brought these families and all these caregivers of people with disabilities together, and guide us on programs where you know where you're going and where to go for that help, I think that would be useful. I know it would be for me. And just hearing that, I think it shows just how complicated their needs are. So really working together to bring a cohesive program and system that really supports the health of people with disabilities is crucial. So thank you again for your time. Appreciate you.